You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
8 minutes past 10. Welcome to the second hour of the Sibus Makhaza Show on Cape Talk and 702 with me, Gugs Mhlungu. Good to be with you, and we're together until midday today. I'm joined now in studio by Gareth Newman, who's the head of Justice and Violence Prevention Program at the Institute for Security Studies. This is part two of a series that the Sibus Makhaza Show has been doing on police leadership and some of the challenges, some of them crises, that are making it difficult to get effective policing. And the last time you were here, Gareth, speaking to the show, there'd been a campaign that had been launched, a new campaign by the Institute and Corruption Watch, that was asking for the leadership issues within SAPS to be dealt with. And it was launched at Conhill. So what specifically is the campaign asking for? How do we deal with what we know are various challenges in SAPS?
Well, thank you for having me here again, and good morning, Googs, and to everybody listening. The campaign is really aimed at getting the public to be aware that there are very specific recommendations in the National Development Plan about how the National Commission of the South African Police Service and the Deputy National Commissioners should be appointed. Mm-hmm. Up until now, the way that these posts have been filled is that there have been secret meetings between the president and some of his close advisors, and South Africans have woken up one morning to find a new National Commission of Police. And since the appointment of Jackie Selebi back in 2000, none of these police officers or people being appointed to this post have had any experience in policing. They're not operational police officials. Ria Pieche did not have a single day's experience in policing, knew nothing about crime fighting when she was appointed. She just stepped into that post and basically had to learn from scratch. And that has been hugely disastrous for the police. We've seen specifically since 2012, that was when Ria Pieche was appointed, that there's been quite a substantial deterioration in a variety of different indicators of policing, whether it's the number of roadblocks that have been held by the police, whether it's the number of murder cases that have been closed and solved, or armed robbery cases closed and solved. We've seen increase, for example, in the number of civil claims against the police. It's gone up 175% in the last 5 years. The police are paying out almost 300 million rands per year to people who've been harmed due to police misconduct. And then in the same period of time, we've seen big increases in the murder rate. Has gone up 13%, which means that last year there were almost 3,200 more murders than there were 5 years ago. That's 50 murders per day on average. And that there were almost 32,000 more armed attacks, armed robberies across the country than there were 5 years ago. So it's not because the police haven't been getting additional resources. In fact, in that same time period since 2011, 2012 until the current time, the police budget has gone up by 50% and is now currently standing at just over 87 billion rand. So we know that they have the money. They have a wealth of experience. There are many very highly experienced, dedicated policemen and women at all levels in the police service who know what they're doing. But we have this problem. And the fundamental root, as been identified by the National Planning Commission, was a serial failure of top management. Because police agencies are very hierarchical in nature. So the entire tone of the organization, its ability to perform, its ability to do its job, is really set from the top of the organization, and that trickles down. So when you have people at the top who don't have a clue what they're doing, they tend to cause so much destabilization in the senior echelons that people at the bottom are not getting the kind of guidance, the resources, the allocations, the support, the direction that they need. And so we decided now that there's an opening, because the post is actually vacant. There's an acting National Commission at the moment. And the similar situation we saw happening with the Hawks. The Hawks have also declined substantially in terms of arrests and conviction since 2011-12. That we wanted to get a campaign going, get everybody aware that government has promised us a plan of action. Here, recommendations have been adopted by Cabinet and by the African National Congress in Mangaung in 2012, that the next time that they appoint a National Commission of Police will be following a merit-based, competitive, transparent recruitment process like most of us have to apply for a job against clear criteria. People don't realize that in order to be a constable in the South African Police Service, there are about 18 different criteria you have to meet. But if the president wants you to become the National Commissioner, there are only three criteria. And those criteria are that you have to be South African-born, over the age of 18, and not have a criminal record. That's the criteria. So virtually anybody who meets that criteria could be the National
Police Commissioner.
Exactly. But it's a highly specialized job. It's a job that requires somebody to have a deep and thorough understanding of the of what policing can achieve, the limits of policing, the law governing policing, the constitutions, and the principles of policing. And when that person doesn't understand that and policing fail, the impact is immediate and the impact is severe. People will die. Marikana was a crisis of political leadership and police leadership. It was a failure in those regards. And the result was 112 striking miners got shot, 34 people died on that day, 16th of August, because of a profound failure of police and political leadership. So when the police fail, people get hurt and die. And that's why it is so critically important that the next person to occupy the post of SAPS National Commissioner and the head of the Hawks is a man or woman of impeccable integrity.
That's served in those organizations.
Ideally has some experience and understanding of policing and crime fighting.
I remember a couple of years ago, just after Ria Pierre was appointed, I think she was speaking, I think it was to Deborah Patter, and there was a question around, so A, the instability in the position that there's been, you know, we haven't had a police commissioner finish their tenure, and, you know, people have had to resign or be fired, et cetera, et cetera. And, but also the issue of a lack of institutional knowledge. And I remember she said, it's true that I've never been a police officer, but you don't need, I think she said, you don't need to be a drunkard to own a bottle store. And she said, I'm willing to learn from those who I'll be working with. And she asked that she be judged in 12 months. This was, I can't remember what year this was. And in fact, it may have been the year of Marikana, actually, when she said this.
Yes, it was.
And perhaps she was given the sense that she would be surrounded by people with the institutional knowledge. So at the moment, who advises the top cop in the country? Who is their, what do they call them, their think tank? Who do they get to draw from if we're getting people who perhaps don't have institutional knowledge, who haven't served in the service? Who are the people who are surrounding them? Because Pierre seemed quite certain she would have this brains trust around her.
Well, indeed, she did have that. There's a national management forum in the South African Police Service, and it consists of about 60 or 70 generals who are divisional commissioners, provincial commissioners. There's a number of deputy national commissioners, and many of whom have, you know, decades of policing experience and could give her the kind of guidance she wanted. However, what she did do is start to force out some of those more experienced people. So we saw two deputy national commissioners who had a combined 60 years plus of hard policing experience, who are highly respected, and she forced them out because she didn't like what they were saying. So, you know, she was saying one thing publicly and acting very differently, and then bringing in people and people being appointed. And this has been a problem, is that in that group of people, since Jackie Selebe, Becky Tsele, and Rio Pierre, people have been appointed into that top echelon who should not be there. They've been appointed for reasons not because of their experience or their abilities, but because of their loyalties, their political loyalties. And that causes a lot of destabilization, because instead of having a unified team of dedicated professional police officers who are getting on with the job, there's a lot of backstabbing, there's a lot of distrust between the different groups. And so that's why it's so crucial to make sure that your number one cop, the most powerful police official who decides who is in that, who does what and who gets allocated what position, is a man or woman who understands the importance of each function and is able to make sure that the posts are filled correctly. And so we really want people to get involved in this campaign. We've just launched a survey on our website and Corruption Watch website and on ISS Africa website. You can just Google Crime Hub. And we want people to tell us, what do you think the characteristics, skills, and qualifications should be of the man or woman who occupies the post of the South African Police Service National Commissioner and of the head of the Hawks. We really want to hear from people. This survey will be running until the end of September, and then we will release the results publicly, and we'll make sure that the President, the Minister of Police, and the Portfolio Committee of Police also get the results directly sent to them, because it's high time that in a constitutional democracy, we've got to support our police officials, and there are many good men and women in uniform. In order for us to support them, we must play a role in saying, what do we want? And this is one opportunity we're providing people. So we really encourage people to get onto our websites, complete that survey. The more people that do it, the better. We're already getting people from within the police completing it. We actually ask you if you're a police official or a civilian, because you'd like to hear from the police themselves exactly what do police officials want to see in their bosses. And when we have the results, we hope that'll start getting those with power to appoint, and that's pretty much the President and the Minister of Police, to reflect a bit. And rather than suddenly pointing somebody that they think is going to be personally loyal to them, rather think that there's a bigger picture here. There's a crisis of public security and safety, And the police need decent leadership. And it's not somebody you can just appoint anybody there and hopefully they learn on the job. They won't. We saw what happened, the disaster that was with Rio Piaja.
Mm. Taking your calls on what you think should be the must-have characteristics for the top cop in the country and the leader, the top official at the Hawks on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. I'm joined in studio by the head of the Justice and Violence Prevention Program at the Institute of Security Studies, Gareth Newham, speaking about police leadership and also taking your SMSs on 31702 and 31567.
702 and Cape Talk. Your number one news and talk station.
It's 21 minutes after 10 o'clock. You're still in the Isibus Makhaza Show with me, Gugs Mhlungu, speaking. Policing and the need for better leadership in the policing space, certainly in the positions of the National Police Commissioner and the head of the Hawks, and joined in studio by Gareth Newham from the Institute of Security Studies to speak about this, but also taking your calls and what you think are the characteristics that those individuals in those positions should have on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. Now, in the last couple of months, we've heard quite a lot from the newest police minister, Fikile Mbalula, and there's been a lot of discussion about him as well. This is some of the stuff he said in the last little while.
We are launching operation right now, so the priests are fighting with me. They say that my reverend called me and said, "Hey, Ngaume Mfondini." But those who are dangerous, we've got an appointment. Like I said, I talked to Steve Twente from the grave. And I said we will deal with them with the agility of a cat and the ferocity of a cornered bull. And that in itself means we will not retreat. We are ready for criminals. There's no criminal that can outgun us. We've got killer machines. If they want to test us, we will finish them. And they must understand that when we say that, we mean business. But our boys, you could see even today and everywhere that they are fit. There's no longer a question of Mkaba. Leave Mkaba with me and the generals. The police on the ground is chest out, stomach in. It's business going on. I talked to General Cruiser. We are going for the gym every day. A criminal cannot ask us about the warrant. When he says a warrant, we must say, here is the warrant. We give him a warrant 10 times. And we must have a right to search criminals anytime we want. Search them. They must make life unbearable to be a criminal. You must know that to be a criminal, you belong somewhere in the dustbin of history. We must arrest all corrupt people and demonstrate to the nation that we are serious about fighting corruption. I want to commend our efforts and the efforts of the police, even though it's like praising a fish for swimming, because it is our job, you know, to protect the people of South Africa. But the efforts of the police are not going unnoticed.
So that audio is courtesy of Times Live, the Minister of Police, Fikile Mbalula. Some of his recent statements with regards to policing, but also crime in the country. I mean, he's been quite busy and quite a lot of tough talk. I mean, we heard from him saying, you know, we're ready for the criminals, will not be outgunned. They have an appointment. So speaking quite tough, but we've been here before. Susan Shabangu, we heard some tough talk from her when she was in the position, the former National Police Commissioner, Bikele, also some tough talk from him before he was found to be unfit to hold office and he was fired. So we've been here before. Does it work? Is it what we need?
Well, when politicians speak like this, what they're doing is trying to increase the morale of the police. They're saying to the police, I'm on your side and I'm speaking to the public on your behalf. And they're also saying what the public want to hear. So people generally think, yes, criminals must be treated roughly, and we want to see the police taking on the criminals. But the reality is so much more complex and difficult than that. You know, it was interesting to hear the minister talking about corruption, but how many people who have been implicated in this flood of Gupta emails showing very serious instances of corruption have even had the police come and ask them a single question yet. So once again, it's not a simple we're going to act wherever we see evidence, because certainly some people are untouchable at the moment, as it seems. But more importantly, it's that when you have a democracy and you want people to work with the police, you want your police service to be trusted, respected by the public, so that the public not only provide information about those committing crimes in their midst, but also if a police official, if a police official gets into a dangerous or difficult situation, that other people in the public will come to support them, because they see them as an asset, they see them as a valuable part of the community, an important part of community safety. And the problem is that police officials on the ground confront a very difficult reality every day. They drive around a corner and there's two people, two young men, and they're both covered in blood and they're accusing each other of committing a crime.
Mm-hmm.
The police have no idea what happened there. So do you treat them both as criminals or one as criminal? That is why we have courts. You know, the police are not there to tell you you're a criminal. They're there to say, okay, I have a reasonable suspicion that you've committed a crime. And if I have a reasonable little suspicion, then I'm going to arrest you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll only use force in a minimal and proportional way. So if you resist arrest, then I'll be able to put handcuffs on you and so forth. So if the police act like that and demonstrate that they understand
the law
and everybody's dignity and rights, even those that might be criminals who haven't been found guilty yet by the courts, they'll get a lot of support because people don't want to be treated badly. And what's been happening in South Africa for quite some time now is that, you know, we saw massive increase in the numbers of arrests, sort of about 1.6 million arrests last year. And that means that they're just going out and arresting as many people as possible because they think that's going to do something about crime. First of all, it has no impact on crime because crime is still going up despite huge numbers of arrests. But what it does do is that a vast majority of those arrests, nothing happens to those people other than they have a nasty experience with the police. So you're arresting largely young, poor black men, and you're releasing them over and over again. And then the police officials start thinking, well, I'm going to have to use a bit more force. I'm going to have to demonstrate that I'm in charge here. And they listening to the minister going, yeah, you must treat people toughly. These people are not necessarily criminals. They might just be poor people outside in the streets and the police are arresting them because they've got to reach targets. So that kind of approach undermines the ability of the police to build a trust and respect in the communities.
Mm.
And around the world, we know this because people have been studying police intensively for well over 80 years in different countries. So what we need is a police service of professionals that only use force when it's absolutely necessary and the minimal force required by law, that treat everybody with dignity, and that make sure that the most important thing they can do every day is help people and build trust in the uniform. Being disinterested, being corrupt, being tough, being brutal doesn't work. It has never worked, and it will not work in South Africa. So what we'd like to hear the minister, as the leader of police, saying is talking more about that and how important it is for the police to be seen as trained professionals and trusted and respected by the community because they like the police and want to work with the police, and not rhetoric about being tough against crime and tough against criminals, because that doesn't get us anywhere and has never gotten us anywhere.
So and part of our conversation is around leadership, and the police minister is part of that leadership. But I think there's a lack of clarity, understanding of what role the police minister plays. Is it an oversight role? I mean, when he came in, he promised that he wanted to deal with the issue of vacant posts, of acting positions. And so the role of the police minister, where do they fit in here? And Mbax has been in, well, he's been deputy police minister before. What is his actual role?
His role is to provide political oversight and political guidance to the police. He's not a police official. He's never been trained in policing, and you can never really expect the minister who's a politician to have that background.
Mm-hmm.
So the Constitution says, right, there needs to be a minister of police who oversees the police, gives a direction, and exercises executive oversight. They must not be getting involved in operational decisions. Who should be arrested? What resources should go where? Who should be appointed? Who should be fired? Those are operational issues that a trained police commander needs to make. But they can, for example, what the minister can be saying is, look, our government has said we want to be serious in corruption.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to see all those people implicated in the Gupta emails. I want to see them being taken in for questioning and given warning statements. And I want to see aggressive investigations because there is more than enough evidence there for the police to act against corruption. So that's the kind of thing he can do and then follow up and say, are you doing it?
Mm-hmm.
So he can make sure that police take corruption seriously. He can also say, for example, which he's been doing more recently, I take gender violence very
seriously.
And therefore, I want to make sure that the police take this seriously. There must be private rooms for victims to be interviewed in, and you must be sure that you treat people with respect. And he can give that command, and then he can use the Secretariat of Police, which is also a constitutional structure that has a monitoring and evaluation capacity to independently assess whether the police are doing these things and report to him. So he's ready to give guidance, broad guidance, and broader political direction. But it's up to the National Commission of Police and his senior management team to make sure that that gets translated operationally, and that that person, the National Commissioner, puts the right people in the right positions to do the right thing. And if they see police officials are not performing, that they either get rid of them through a process of performance management. If they see people acting badly or committing ill discipline or corruption, that they ensure they get subject to discipline and get fired. That's not something the Minister of Police should be doing. So they need to be very clear about their roles. The political minister is a political head who gives broad guidance and makes sure the police are adhering to the requirements of the law and the policies of the day. And the National Commission of Police is there to make sure that's operationally sound and that's happening within the law. And that's the two roles that they play together.
Okay, so we're going to come back on the issue of police commissioners and leadership, because that was a big part of the findings of the Farlam Commission after Marikana. And those recommendations are still, you know, quite a big part of the discussion around the issues at SAPS.
Call us on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567.
24 minutes before 11 o'clock, you're still on the Cebus Makaza Show in Cape Talk and 702, speaking about leadership in policing and what kind of individual, what characteristics the head of the SAPS through the National Police Commissioner, as well as the head of the Hawks, should have. And we're taking your suggestions on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702. We also take your SMSs on 31702 and 31567. Tato in Marshalltown, good morning.
Morning. You know, here's my suggestion would be maybe the National Police Commission at least have 5 years, having served as provincial police commissioner, and possibly looking at a structure like the Hawks, where it occupies the same status as not become a Chapter 9 institution. So they also have the authority to investigate or refer back things to the police or intervene on that matter and report only to the Constitution, sort of to give them that autonomy.
Okay, so 5 years at a provincial commissioner level.
Having served uninterrupted, on a clean slate.
Mm. Would that be the kind of thing we'd like to see, Gareth? I mean, what are the requirements for a provincial commissioner? Are they tougher than national police commissioner?
Yes, they are tougher than national commissioner. Actually, sure. the easiest position to be pointed to without having to worry about
is national police commissioner.
But all the other posts do require quite rigorous minimum criteria.
Mm-hmm.
To serve as a lieutenant general, you really, you generally are subject to an assessment center where they look at your qualifications, how long you've been in the police, your previous positions, what you've been serving in. And then they do, in real life sort of simulations where you'll be sitting at a desk and they'll be throwing different problems at you and you now can respond to those as a way of seeing how you apply the law, how you understand policing policy, what you know about policing. So yes, I don't think that the current system for appointing most of the posts is the problem. I think there could be some tweaks here and there. There's always a room for improvement, obviously. But the main problem has been political interference, where people, we saw under people like Becky Tele, Sunny, people getting, promoted six ranks, going from a captain to a general, for example, because they were his ex-VIP protection bodyguard. People being pulled into positions without those posts being being properly advertised and people being assessed. There's a particular regulation or sort of section in the Police Act which provides the National Commission of Police with the power to override all policies. And that has often been abused. So what we've seen, even the idea behind that is that, for example, say the police suddenly discover we're having a serious problem with cybercrime. We need people who have got expertise in cyber affairs, computing, software, that kind of thing. And we don't have people in the police, and this is an emerging issue. Then that regulation allows the National Commissioner to bring in people at a lateral level who might not have been trained in policing, but can provide huge capacity and ability to the police to fight a particular crime. But generally, it's been abused. So what's been happening is that some of the national commissioners and even acting national commissioners, apparently at Bacalani was making between 70 or 80 appointments using that regulation. Start putting people there without going through a proper process because they're loyal to them, because they like them, knowing that those people then would be loyal to them. And that causes a lot of problems because it means that, there's two police officials. One is mediocre, maybe hasn't been working very hard, but he's very friendly with whoever happens to be the National Commissioner.
So they get to
stay. Yeah, another woman's been working really hard. She's got a master's in policing through, one of the universities, and she's really been applying herself. And then she doesn't get appointed because there was no assessment of the post. So as soon as the police deviate from their standing procedures and their processes, then you start seeing a profound breakdown. And that's what's been one of the big problems for some time now. Mm. And some of this has been political interference, particularly within the crime intelligence capacity. Mm. That is something that is really of huge concern to us and many people in the police. Because the 195,000 police people working for the South African Police Service don't need to police all 55 million people in the country equally. They need to go after those 100,000 who are committing most of violent, serious crimes. Mm-hmm. But in order to identify who those 100,000 are, they need crime intelligence. And that capacity helps the police identify who these people are, because it's based on some of its technology, where they can track your phone calls, all your social media, what you're doing, where you're going, where you're moving. So they can see people who are buying stolen goods or planning operations. On the other hand, they can actually infiltrate these gangs or these criminal syndicates through, mm-hmm. through operatives. But that capacity has been so politicized and so profoundly dysfunctional with the suspension and criminal prosecution of the current head of that unit, Richard and Bluely, Lieutenant General Richard Bluely. He's facing two separate criminal trials. He's been on full pay for 6 years with all his perks and benefits, and apparently still connected into the intelligence environment. And that means that we've had a series of different acting heads, and they're there for a few months or a year. Pat Mokoshana was there recently for only 2 months before he's been removed. And there's a lot of concern that the reason for that is that that capacity is not being used to identify who's involved in crime and corruption, as much as being used for political purpose to monitor people that maybe are threatening the corrupt elites, people like journalists, like other political parties, like people within the African National Congress who might be challenging certain factions. So that capacity has not been providing the information that the other components of the police need in order to go and aggressively and proactively take out those syndicates that are causing this mayhem in our streets, where people are increasingly being killed in home robberies and street robberies. And that's what a big concern is about that.
Mm. I want to touch on vetting. That's come up quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. But before that, Mike in Tokai. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Mike.
Our Minister of Police thinks that he's still the old sports minister. He thinks by bringing a bigger soccer ball to the game, he's going to win the game. That's why he talks about big guns. 15 minutes after the new shift, the policemen go on duty. Our gangsters and normers and that know exactly who's on shift, what van they're driving, what registration they've got, how much they've got to pay them for that shift. They know who's corrupt, who isn't corrupt. And our sports minister talks about big guns. If only he'd sit down with intelligent people and ask them infiltrate. And our police should have a special unit that goes around busting just corrupt people, taking bribes from. They do it openly in front of the merchants. Every single 10 rand doesn't go into a merchant's pocket. It goes into the police, because 10 rand's like change to them. And they give all the green money to that. That's what's so wrong with our police at the moment. Yeah, lekker. Just ranting about that.
Thank you very much for your call. That's Mike in Tokai. The minister himself touched on the issue of vetting, or trying to root out some of the criminal elements that are undermining the work of the police service, saying, you know, they're going to deal with it. It was a couple of weeks ago, was it 2 months ago? I think 7 or 8 police officers were found to have been taking bribes, were removed from duty, and they've been doing quite a big job of ensuring that the public is kept informed about these operations, where members of the force or the service who are found to be dealing in crime are also dealt with. But part of that is about vetting. And in the last couple of weeks, we've gotten a sense that the vetting isn't all that great or robust. How does the vetting work?
Well, indeed, that's what the big scandal with the most recent acting head of crime intelligence was, that he didn't have his security clearance for that post. So there's 4 levels. There's restricted information, confidential, secret, and top secret. So depending on what kind of information you have access to as a government official, it's not just for the police, you need to first be vetted, security vetted. And that, depending on your position and depending on the sensitivity of the information you have, will be quite thorough and quite vigorous. At the top level, top secret level, you can be expected to undertake a polygraph test, mm-hmm. before a panel a number of times as they investigate your finances. They interview your friends and your family, and they look into your past. They look into any debts you have, mm-hmm. any kind of suggestions that you might have be using drugs or alcohol, anything like that. So it can be incredibly invasive, and it's necessary, because before you make somebody the head of crime intelligence, who can pretty much listen in on anybody's conversation in the country.
They have immense power.
Yeah, and track politicians, and you know, and have immense power to really to get very sensitive information that could be very harmful if it fell into the wrong hands. You know, issues to do with national security, issues with massive procurement projects the government's planning, and that kind of thing. You need to make sure that that person is a man or woman of immense integrity, and that they have nothing to hide. And that they've just, you know, they do their job and they do it with the right level of honesty, and they are experienced people. And so that integrity, that vetting is there to make sure that happens. But now, as we see, what's been happening is that the, certainly in more recent cases, and even with Richard Bluley, that the vetting either expires and is not redone, or people are appointed before there's clarity on whether they actually have the right security clearance. Mm-hmm. And in this most recent case, there are allegations with the Lieutenant General Mukhushana that, in fact, he was not able to pass the vetting, and so people supporting him, various brigadiers, were trying to print out fake security clearance forms to try and make it look like he'd been vetted. So that points to corruption within the police system themselves. Mm. But generally, that's it's one mechanism for tackling corruption. But the good news is that the police, you know, they're certainly very aware of this. We had a seminar at the Institute for Security Studies on Tuesday where we had the recently appointed national head of integrity management. And that's part of an anti-corruption strategy that the police have already adopted and starting to implement. So it's both proactive and reactive. And the proactive capacity that they're building up through this integrity unit is to start doing things like lifestyle audits, identifying police officials who are living beyond their means. Mm-hmm. You might be getting if you're a constable and you're receiving your salary, but you're driving around a brand new car and very expensive house and stuff. So that's the kind of thing they're going to start doing, which is a very proactive, very necessary way of fighting corruption. And then also bolstering the capacity, both within the Hawks and within the detective services, to have dedicated police officials who do nothing but go after corrupt cops. Mm. So this strategy gets implemented. It's a very good strategy. Then we should start seeing quite an increase in the number of police officials who are being arrested and criminally charged or being dismissed for being involved in corruption and corruption-related activities, which will go a long way to improving the morale of those honest officers who do difficult work in difficult circumstances but don't take bribes. And we know that there are many officers like that. Mm. On the one hand, and making sure that the public then know when you see a police official, you will be surprised if the police official tries to be brutal or corrupt towards you, because only good police, or more increasingly good police officials, will be in the police, and the corrupt ones are being rooted out. Mm. So that is something that is being done, and people aren't generally aware of it. It's not very exciting stuff. It's slow, policy-driven implementation of strategies. But hopefully we will see the new appointed National Commissioner of Police as somebody who really realizes how crucially important it is to improve the integrity of the organization as a whole, and really drives that strategy, and that will make a huge difference in the coming years.
Mm. Mateo in Soweto, good morning.
Good morning, Gook.
Yes.
Indeed, it is crucial to put the integrity of the organization, you know, into order.
Mm.
You know, Gook, the gentleman we have there in the studio, he used to be my colleague. Before the new dispensation, police were the acronym that was utilized, it was police force. And it was changed into police staff, which means rendering service. So we were so excited that now we are Uhuru, we are free now, because I'm a product of 1976. I was a student at that time. You could imagine how old am I today. I'm a pensioner. So nothing has changed so far pertaining to the policing aspect. Because the reason is there's so much bribe, as Gareth alluded earlier on, there's so much corruption going on. Money, you know, the whistleblowers are being killed as well. So policing is all about a community effort of everybody. Mm. Everybody should participate in the community as well, so that to get the country into order, we have to put our heads together and police together. Police is not just a policeman. If you are not around, I see somebody jumping into your yard, I'm also doing some kind of policing, you know, mm. of being aware of what is going on around me, of trying to be patriotic and protecting my neighbor. You know, it is so difficult because now even a three-year-old child asks you what's going on in the ANC, what's happening in the policing department, you can't even explain to a little child, because it is so confusing. What is the meaning of democracy? Because it negates the whole definition of democracy, what is happening now. We are also so confused because there's the other caller who called earlier, and he said people are looking at Isha, but it was not Yoshua. I think it was the guy that was before, the Kolani Kwala show. That guy was saying people are looking at each other with rage. You know, rage ke go raga ka Sesotho. When you want to kick at a person, you make a facial expression that says, I'm going to kick you. So if you call it rage in Sesotho, this is how we look at each other lately. We don't trust each other, Gugumtanam. Really, we are crying. We are suffering. We are succumbing to a very painful process now. Everybody is paining inside. Which, what is going on? You know. Please, Gugu, we need help. I mean, these NGOs are there to help the government. The NGOs are being poured with money so that they can be able to do what they're supposed to do, to help the government, because the government, as I said, they can't do it alone. But it has to be reality pertaining to the how aspect. I mean, there were workshops where I was working, you know, there were dialogues pertaining to policy and department. But nothing has changed so far. And I'm already a pensioner, and I've seen nothing. I've not yet reaped the fruit of liberation. I'm still crying. You know, the blood of the martyrs, that watered the liberation, they're not yet saying Uhuru. They've died, most of them. Yeah, I'm also aging myself. But what I'm seeing happening and hearing the very same voice. Now Karasi is a manager at ISS, you know. But I don't see anything happening. Nothing is happening. Nothing is changing.
Thank you very much for that call, Mattel.
What about our 3-year-olds? What are we going to tell them, Coco? Please, somebody do something. I thank you.
Thank you very much for your call. That's Mateo in Soweto. And maybe we can speak about perhaps if there have been gains and what those look like. But continuing with your calls as well on 021-446-0567 and 011-883-0702.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
6 minutes before 11 o'clock. Welcome back to the show. Gareth, in terms of the next step, so we were just chatting before we came back about when we'll have a sense of when or when the new police commissioner will be appointed. There isn't a definite date.
No, the president has the sole and unconstrained discretion as to when to appoint a new commissioner of police. And so that could happen at any time. This campaign is not just about the national commissioner, it's also about the head of the Hawks, and that's a process that's still got some way to unfold because of the court case involving Bernie Meza, who's the suspended head of the Hawks. So we'll continue this, but I think just to respond to the earlier caller, you know, somebody who's feeling quite despondent at the moment, and I understand that. I've been working in this field for close to 20 years. And we've seen ups and downs. I mean, certainly from the birth of democracy in 94, you know, the next few years up until sort of the mid-2000s, there was a lot of changes in the police and a lot of effort to try and train the police differently to make sure that they understood the law, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And there were some really good improvements there. Then with Jackie Salewa being involved in investigating in corruption and then being investigated by the Scorpions, and that kind of conflict resulted in certain deterioration. But then we had Bheki Tshele, and he came at a time just when there was a lot of enthusiasm about the World Cup in 2010. So we had this man who was building up police morale and a lot of resources going into the police, and there was increased morale in police. We saw improvements then. And then after that, Bheki Tshele being fired for being involved in the administration, according to Public Protector. And then Priya Pieka. So it's going to be up and down. But I think what people must recognize is that there are really still very good men and women in the South African police service at all levels. And there's some really good initiatives that are taking place. I mean, there's an amazing new operational command concept that's been implemented in Port Elizabeth, in Bethesdale and Glevendale. From October last year, which has substantially increased the number of arrests for people involved in gangsters and gang killings and reduced crime in that area quite substantially. And that's a particular concept that Lieutenant General Gary Cruiser is one of the Deputy National Commissioners responsible for. They've set up a new research unit at the beginning of last year that is starting to engage the research community to better understand the evidence that helps us identify good policing practices. And so it's really, I think we've got to find those men and women at our local police precincts that we can trust, that we can work with. Because we as citizens, we as people in this country have to take responsibility. We can't leave it to the politicians to do these things for us.
Mm.
We must get involved. We must raise our voices. If we see a bad cop, we must show that report that to the IPD or to the police itself, so there's a paper trail, so there's evidence of somebody having done wrong. And similarly, if we see a police official who's gone out of their X-ray to help us, you know, write a letter to their commander, write, use social
report
media.
Report that as well.
Yeah, so when you have good experiences, tell people about it. When you have bad experiences, report it through the official channels.
Mm.
And that way we'll be able to always encourage those men and women who are going to be there for the next 10, 20 years to stay in the police, and so that when the political situation changes and we start seeing ourselves hopefully in the near future on an upward trajectory towards better economy, better honest politicians, lower corruption, those are things that can happen if we all play our role. And that's why the survey that you can get off our website, just Google Crime Hub or the Corruption Watch website, is one way for you to give your voices to something that you've never been asked before. No one has ever been really asked, what would you like to see in the head of the Hawks?
Mm, or the National Police Commissioner.
We want to give the public, the people of South Africa, people living in this country, the opportunity, and particularly police officials, let us hear your voices, because we will take that information. We'll make sure the people at the top of the political elite, that the police minister, and as I said earlier, the politicians, the portfolio committee, get that information. Mm. And so that you can have your voice heard. So we really encourage people to fill the survey in. It's one small way of being involved today. But in the long term, you know, get to know your police, support the good cops, report the bad cops.
Thank you very much. That's Gareth Newham, the head of Justice and Violence Prevention Program at the Institute of Security Studies.